And we're going to start by talking snooker, because we haven't done snooker yet on the guest list. And we're, what, 7, 8, 9 weeks into it. So I'm delighted to say that 2002 World Snooker Champion Peter Ebdon kicks us off this afternoon. Hello, Peter.
Hi, Mark. How are you? Good afternoon.
I'm very well. How are you? Where are you at the moment? And as we say to everybody okay? Lockdown okay for you at the moment?
It's a very, very strange situation, isn't it? There's a lot of strange stuff going on out there at the moment.
Are you in this country?
But no, I'm okay. I'm in the UK, thanks, yeah.
Okay. And actually, it's been quite a momentous month maybe for you, in that you decided to retire at the end of April. And I suppose the reason I'm questioning month is that that's a decision that might take longer than two or three weeks to come up with.
Yes, I did an interview with Mark Pearson from Betfred, who are the sponsors of the World Championship. And I suppose in a way it was an exclusive, because he asked me if I would be playing in the World Championship qualifying this year, and I said, unfortunately, not. It had probably been about 5 or 6 weeks prior to that when I went to see a professor in Coventry for the results of an MRI scan that I'd had done. And unfortunately, the results were very, very bad indeed. I've got severe wear and tear in C3, C4, C5 in my neck, and C6 and C7 need to be replaced if I really want to continue with my snooker career. It's a very serious operation. If it went wrong, I could be in a wheelchair for the rest of my life. He explained to me that it was no cure by any means. It could make things worse. And that even if it was successful, I may need to have it done again in 10 years' time. So, to be honest, when I looked at the results on screen, I knew immediately that my career was over.
I mean, that's a... I mean, that's a double blow, isn't it? I mean, that's the your health concerns and your worry for your body, but that also has an effect on your career. So that hits you in two ways.
Yeah, I've been playing snooker for 36 years, a professional for 29 years. It's not really the way that I would have liked to have ended my career, but I've been in a lot of pain since Christmas time. You know, lots of pain in, you know, like a lot of other full-time snooker players that have been playing snooker for a long time. I've had a lot of back, neck, shoulder problems. I've not been able to practice properly, to be perfectly honest, over the last couple of seasons because of the amount of pain I've been in. Even when I was doing some work for World Snooker during the Masters in January, I was on painkillers all the way through that. And unfortunately, it sort of came to a head, really, when I went to the funeral of a good friend of mine in Hungary. He was very sadly killed in a car crash, and I was on so many painkillers and I was on so much pain, I just thought, do you know what, I'm not going to take these painkillers anymore because it's not making any difference. So that was the start of it, and when I saw the results, it was a shock. But you know, my health has to come first, and I must thank all of the people that have been helping me, especially from my fellow professional healers at the College of Healing in Malvern. So Diane, Joe, Meg and Angela, the work that they've been doing with me has reduced my pain considerably, especially in the last 4 or 5 weeks, and I'm very, very thankful to them.
Oh, and actually, that was going to be my next question, Peter. So without the snooker now, is it going to be manageable? Are you will be able to ease the pain, will you, for day-to-day living?
2 months ago, I would have said no, in all honesty, and I was in excruciating pain. I felt as if I'd had a steel plate inserted into my right forearm, and this was all coming from compression in my neck. It was going right across my shoulders, all the way down my right arm, through my elbow, into my right hand. I was getting pins and needles constantly, and it was actually in preparation for the Welsh Open. I went into practice with another of my fellow professionals, Jamie O'Neill at Barrett's in Northampton, and I took my cue out of the case. I got down to play a shot and I was in excruciating pain. I played 4 shots and I said, Jamie, I've got to go. I went to see a good friend of mine, Joe, who's a master acupuncturist. I went to see her straight away.
Yeah.
She managed to alleviate the pain there and then, but obviously I've been in constant pain. You know, and I can't reiterate enough just how thankful I am for all the healing that I've had, especially in the last couple of months. It's made a huge difference. But unfortunately, as far as my snooker career, is concerned, I would need to have that operation to be able to play snooker again. And there's no way that I'm going to go through that just in case it does go wrong.
And when we, to go back to the start of this conversation, you mentioned the sort of, that's through the, this has happened through the wear and tear of your career, has it?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, long-term wear and tear. So, as I mentioned, like most other professional snooker players that have been playing for 20 years or more, I've had severe neck, back, shoulder problems, hamstrings, all that sort of stuff. Despite doing lots and lots of swimming, when I managed to win the World Championship in 2002, I was swimming 2 miles a day at that time. So I was probably fitter at that point than I've ever been in my entire life. But unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to do that anymore. So I've just been going out, you know, walking for a day, every day for about an hour. And that's also made a big difference, just to be able to get out and get some movement. So fortunately, I'm in nowhere near as much pain as I was 2 months ago.
Has your practice and training routine then over your, I mean, you mentioned 29-year professional career, I'm guessing that has changed from the moment you started 29 years ago to, as you say, even doing the swimming around 2002?
I think it started when I started practicing with Kyron Wilson, because I would never get a shot with him and I was just taking balls out all day long. So that was an early indication that the end of my career was nigh. But no, he's a great lad, Kyron. I think he's future world champion, and it's great to have been his practice partner, along with Rory McLeod, Harvey Chandler, Jamie O'Neill, the other professionals at Barrett's in Northampton. They're a great bunch of lads, and obviously I wish them all the best, as I do with all the other lads on the tour. They're a really nice bunch of lads. The game is very well managed, very professionally managed by Jason Ferguson and Barry Hearn, who's done an amazing job with snooker, as he does with everything else that he touches. So the future of snooker is looking good. Not so good for me, but now it's time for me to turn my attention to other things. I gained my own professional healing certificate from the College of Healing in Malvern in Worcestershire in February last year, 2019, after completing a 2-year practitioner's course in spiritual and energy healing. So that will be the future with me. And I've also got a professional pedigree consultancy business, which I set up 4 years ago with Thoroughbred Bloodlines, which has been my main passion really for the last 30 years. So, you know, there's plenty of things that I can be turning my attention and focus to.
I said they're two very different things, aren't they? You've got the healing side of things, and you're a certified Reiki practitioner as well, aren't you?
I started my training with Reiki. I did my first 2 Reiki degrees with a very good friend of mine, Karen, who's based in Northamptonshire. She's a Reiki master. And I chose not to do my 3rd degree in Reiki when I started the College of Healing, a 2-year healing practitioners course in Malvern. So it's similar to Reiki, but we don't use the symbols that Reiki masters use.
Okay, so there are similarities, are there?
There are similarities. I mean, for anybody that's interested, there is a great book out there called Healing in a Hospital. And it's a true story of a woman who went through a similar 2-year healers practitioners course to me with a different healing organization. Her name is Sandy Edwards. And she managed to get a lottery grant from memory, I think of about £205,000, to give healing to people in an NHS hospital in Birmingham, I believe. And those people had IBS, colitis and Crohn's. So they would come in and see their doctor. Then they would go next door and receive healing from her for 20 minutes. And the feedback was absolutely amazing. After the 2-year study, which involved hundreds of people, they then brought the scientists in to collate all the information.
Yeah.
And the scientists discovered that there was a 1 in 300 chance that the healing hadn't made a difference. It might have been 1 in 200 chance, actually. But the really incredible thing is that when people couldn't make their appointments, Sandy Edwards sent them distant healing, which is pure thought connection, pure thought transference, bringing through loving healing energy, basically. And the scientists worked out that when people received distant healing, there was a 1 in 30,000 chance that the distant healing hadn't made a difference to the way they felt.
Goodness me.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing stuff. That is an incredible book, Healing in a Hospital by Sandy Edwards. And if anybody would be interested in healing, they can contact the College of Healing, any other healing organisation that is certified, and the results are actually quite incredible.
When did you start to show an interest in this side of things? Because, you know, if people only know you from watching snooker on the telly or the odd snooker interview that you've given, some of the stuff that we're talking about here, people are going, I can't equate how Peter Ebdon, world snooker champion, is now talking about professional healing and Reiki. So when did that start to...
Well, it's life-changing. It probably would have been 4 or 5 years ago when my back was in such a bad way that I couldn't stand up straight, that the whole top half of my torso was leaning over to the right and my head was down low, and I was in excruciating pain and I just couldn't stand up, and obviously I couldn't practice playing snooker. And I looked through the local directory for healers in Northamptonshire, and I came across a woman who had become a very good friend of mine, who's one of the major people at the College of Healing in Malvern, Jo Radley. I went over and saw her. So she's a healer, she's a master acupuncturist, she's a Reiki master, she's a rolfing specialist. And within one session, approximately 45 minutes, I walked out of her surgery in no pain and with a straight back. And I went back to see her regularly for acupuncture, and we started talking about healing and energy. And she said to me, well, you know, you've obviously got an interest in these things. Why don't you come on the Healers Practitioners course at the College of Healing? And to be honest, it was way outside my comfort zone. I mean, I'm very much of an introvert sort of person. And to go into a group learning about healing energy with people was a really challenging experience. But the support that I had there from the College of Healing was amazing. So I went on the course and qualified to be a professional healer. And since that time, I've now given just over 300 healing sessions, and I've done all of that for free. So I've given healing on a professional basis to friends, family, and other professional healers. But obviously, I've not had the time to go to a practice because obviously I've been playing snooker, but now that I do have the time to do that, I'm probably going to go to my local healing centre in Oxford Street in Wellingborough and become a professional healer there. So that's something that I'm really looking forward to.
Wow. Is professional sport or your sphere of professional sport, is it open-minded to this kind of thing, or is it sceptical? And therefore, when you first started, you know, investigating this and doing this, were people around you, were you yourself at the start? I don't know. Were you sceptical, cynical, or were you?
I've always been very open-minded. I'm quite sceptical of what the government tells people, but that's a different story. Perhaps we shouldn't go into that. But no, I've always been very open-minded. And I've always been interested in healing and energy, and with the pedigrees, I've been really interested in genetics and that sort of thing. So I try and keep myself up to date with all of those things. But, you know, yes, there are snooker players that I've given healing to, and the feedback that I've had, and especially when I've sent distant healing to people, the feedback has just been absolutely incredible. I think I've probably done about only 4 healing sessions this week, but the healing feedback has been very, very good. And I'm very thankful. And the one thing that I must stress is that when people give healing, it's not their energy that they're giving up. They channel energy, what we would call source energy. Some people might call it Christ consciousness. But basically, there is one energy that surrounds all of us, that makes all of us up. So that is the energy that all healers channel. And it's always for a person's highest and greatest good. And you would be very, very surprised at the level and the extent of positive feedback from people that receive healing.
I hope this isn't a really stupid question, and I apologise if it is. So what you're talking about there with healing and humans and the energy, is that the same with the breeding of the horses? And that may be a really clunky gear change, but But I'm interested, you sort of mentioned there is a bit of crossover between the two. But
there
when
is.
You.
Well, you know, horses are very spiritual animals. And if a professional healer were to tune into a horse, that horse would definitely be able to pick up that energy from the healer. And it would also benefit the horse considerably. And the way that perhaps I can explain it to people that are not familiar with healing energies is that if you walk into a room and meet somebody, immediately you pick up on the vibration or the energy of that room. And we do it all the time when we meet people. There are people that we are immediately attracted to, that we like. There are people that we have reservations about. And that's all about the energetic imprint, which is embedded in that person within their aura. And we all have the capability, with a little bit of training, to pick up on those energies.
I've been doing quite a bit of reading about this in the last couple of years. So I do find it particularly fascinating, and I do wonder whether, in your experience of it, do you think people need to be more open minded?
I think it's a very positive thing to be open minded. I mean, you know, without wanting to be too political about things at the moment, there's an awful lot of brainwashing going on, and the problem. Everybody's been given the blue pill every day by the national media, you know, by the mainstream media. And to be able to sample the red pill, you have to go outside mainstream media to really get a clear indication of what's going on. There are some wonderful and independent researchers out there, and I would very highly recommend people research programs like UK Column, which is available on YouTube on Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays at 1 p.m. There's a very good friend of mine, Andrew Johnson, who's got a website out there called checktheevidence.com. You know, there are a lot of people out there that are trying to make a difference and wake people up to what's going on out there. Another very good researcher is a guy called Richard D. Hall. There's another guy from America called Del Bigtree. He's got a program called The High Wire. And these people are really trying to make a difference. They're not doing it for their own benefit. They're trying to wake people up as to what's going on out there. And this is a very, very serious matter. In my honest opinion, we're now facing the greatest psychological operation in history.
Wow. The greatest psychological operation in history?
Yes, absolutely, 100%. I actually sent a tweet yesterday to Piers Morgan, which he didn't reply to.
Right.
But I've done a lot of research on this thing, on these things, as a lot of people would have had the opportunity over the last couple of months. And there's an Irish professor out there called Professor Dolores Cahill. And all the information that we're getting from the governments at the moment, she would be going in exactly the opposite direction. And I said to him, basically, in the tweet that I sent to Piers Morgan yesterday, if you had the balls to interview Professor Dolores Cahill on mainstream media, on your program, people would be going back to work next week.
Do you
100% guaranteed?
Do you worry about talking out? Do you worry about speaking about your beliefs and opinions?
No, not at all. No,
Would you if you were still playing?
I've always been a bit controversial, but I've always been my own person. You know, I like to be independent thinking. I'm a free thinker. You know, if people attack me, people try to politicise things. But there are people from the left, if you want to talk about politics, there are people from the left and from the right that are interested in the truth. Whereas there are very intelligent people out there that seem to want to politicise everything. It's not about politicising things. It's about seeking the truth. You know, is social distancing harmful? Yes, it probably is harmful. People need touch. People need to shake hands. People need to build up their immunity. People need to be hugged.
And if you are on your own in lockdown, then the mental health, as you're alluding to, we won't know the true cost of that for a while, will we?
Oh, it's absolutely devastating. Absolutely devastating.
Just a final one, Peter, which is slightly odd because we've had a really quite an in-depth and fascinating discussion. I'm kind of going to bring it back to the sport now and the sport.
Yeah, really wanted to talk about snooker, didn't you? Really?
No. The beauty of this show, Peter, is that to be honest with you, I'm never sure where any interview is going to go, and that's why I like doing it. And actually, with the time that we have available, and with sport not taking place, I think it gives us a real insight into sportsmen and women that we don't often get, really, because we're so obsessed with the sport. But a couple of snooker fans have got in touch, and I would just throw this out to finish with. Do you think when sport resumes and when snooker gets back, you've already slightly alluded to it, that the sport is in a good place?
Oh, it's in a fantastic place. You know, the standard now is higher than it's ever been. And to be honest, it's been an absolute honour and a privilege for me to be part of professional snooker and to play some of the great champions throughout my career. You know, I've had some wonderful times. I managed to, you know, be a world champion, a UK champion. I won 9 ranking events. I think as we stand at this present moment in time, there are only 10 players in snooker history that have been more successful than I've been, which, you know, is not bad for a young lad from Islington, from a working class family. So, you know, I've worked very, very hard. I worked hard on the physical side of things. And I know I've said before in interviews that the year that I won the World Championship in 2002, I was swimming 2 miles a day. I started that tournament 11 stone 8, and 17 days later, I was 10 stone 3. So I lost almost a stone and a half in 17 days. And that was all due to the stress. People have got no idea, to be perfectly honest, the stress levels involved in professional sport, and especially in professional snooker, because the players are in that fight or flight response when that biologically is designed to last 30 seconds, 2 minutes maximum. We can be in that fight or flight response for hours. The stress, the levels of cortisol coursing through your veins are unbelievable. And to be honest, since I've made the decision to retire, and I know it was the right thing for me to do as far as my health is concerned, I've been so much more relaxed and so chilled out, because when you're a professional sportsman, you're on alert all the time. And it's the time in between the matches, when you've got time to think about things, where things can be very, very difficult mentally. I guarantee you there is no professional sportsman in history that has not suffered mentally with depression, etc. It's not talked about enough, but everybody suffers, trust me. You know, and to be able to put yourself in somebody else's shoes and to be kind and to walk a mile in their shoes, so to speak, is a very important thing to be able to do.
Peter, that seems a very suitable place to leave it. Thank you for a truly fascinating chat, and I wish you all the best with the future career, and also with your neck as well. And congratulations on your career as a snooker player as well. Thank you for coming on, Peter.
Thanks, Mark. I really appreciate
it. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Peter Ebdon, who announced his retirement a couple of weeks ago.